How are we going to pronounce this? Is this your, you are?
I don't know.
Because it's printed in capital U R sometimes, and then sometimes it's capital U, lowercase r.
I think we just say you are is easiest.
The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the King Zone Book Club podcast, a spin-off of the King Zone podcast, where Bede, the terrible Aussie Germain, and Super Marcy discuss the filmic works of Stephen King here at the Book Club. Marcy and I concentrate on the short stories and novellas. Marcy, hi.
Hello, hello. We are back again and we are managing to stay on some kind of schedule.
I could get used to this.
This is very good. And how are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing good. I have just finished up these stories. I was a little rushed to get this one in because of our schedule. But no, I'm feeling really good and ready and raring to talk about these. This is a sort of a sequel episode to our evil technology episode.
Yes, yes, there was.
It was the word processor of the gods.
The typewriter thing, yes, the word processor.
And sorry, right number.
That's it.
So today we're looking at two stories. One is more of a novella called and the second story is called Red Screen, which is the shortest of short stories, but it was very cool. So I'm going to throw it right at you. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, we should talk about, if we go by a release order, was released first.
Okay.
And is the longer one. But at the same time, do we talk about the shorter one first?
No, I like release date. I like where you're going there. Okay. So was published as an ebook on February 12th, 2009. It was written exclusively for Kindle and available only through Amazon. It was reprinted in a heavily revised form in the short story collection The Bazaar of Bad Dreams in 2015. A synopsis for the story: Wesley Smith, an English teacher at a Kentucky college, buys a Kindle after his now ex-girlfriend throws his copy of Deliverance across the room and asks why he can't read off the computer like everybody else. The Kindle he receives, however, is pink instead of the standard white, and he slowly realizes that this edition was meant for another Wesley Smith, one from a parallel universe. What did you make of this one?
I did not realize that this was, as long as it was, it's borders between short story and novella with its length. But yeah, if you couldn't tell, this was an exclusive for Kindle. You read the word Kindle a hell of a lot in this story. Besides the advertisement, I was quite engrossed in the story, which helped that it flew by. I thought, oh God, this can take me forever to read because I'm just very rusty with some of my reading. But no, I was quite engrossed with the story, with this Wesley Smith character who's an English teacher. He's a book guy, and was sort of with the conflict with his girlfriend, and then kind of, yeah, I'm going to pick up a Kindle and be cool and stuff. We get a lot of inner monologue about that, which is
right.
Quite funny. Like, do I want to be old school, new school? How do the kids in the class feel about it? There's a lot of that, like, randomly in there with this little world building that we have going.
Yeah.
But it's, he orders the Kindle and then it arrives the next day, but he didn't pay for next delivery and such. And he notices it's pink, where all the others seem to be just the white, but it looks like Kindle, everything looks right. And as he kind of sees this extra menu, the your you are menu, and this is where things get more interesting as he starts to, what is this you are thing? And as he's looking, he's like, okay, I'll look up Ernest Hemingway. But then he sees books that he's never heard of, like
Yeah.
Ernest Hemingway couldn't have written these, but they're written exactly as Hemingway would. So this leads him down the rabbit hole, and it sort of starts to be revealed to him, as it is us, that this is like an alternate universe or something where multiple authors on this UR search have different dates of death. There's a lot of extra work in there. I think he brings up, like, there's a conversation about Shakespeare and Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. And he gets, I think it's one of his teaching colleagues, who I can't remember the name, and
Don.
Robbie, one of the students. Yes, Don. Don Allman makes his little joke, yes.
His Allman Brothers joke, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, as they discover it as well, it certainly looks like, yeah, this could be from, like, alternate universes where things have happened. So, but as we get more into it, there's other sections for, like, news and stuff. So they start investigating that, and they come up where there's alternate realities where different things happen with JFK. And in one which really unnerves them is that the Cuban Missile Crisis in the early 60s escalated into another big war.
Yeah.
And then this sort of leads to the third option in the URR, which is like the local news, but you can only put in future dates. And pretty much from here, you know what's going to happen. We know it's been drilled into us that Wesley wants to talk to his girlfriend after the breakup and stuff. And she's told him, yes, we'll do this. But she's a basketball coach. She's taking the team out of town to play the finals or something. Mm-hmm. And we know about this a lot. And as he finds out, well, the girls' basketball team is going to be in a terrible, horrible crash. So then he enlists Robbie, whose girlfriend is also a part of the crash, to perhaps try and change what's going to happen. However, there is a warning that he agreed to, which is you pretty much can't, you're not allowed to do anything. I can't remember what it's
the paradox called, laws.
The paradox laws, that's it. You're not allowed to break the paradox laws. So once they do change what's happening, well, Wesley gets a visit from some men in the yellow coats. But we also bring in that the Kindle shows a dark tower.
I want to put a pin in the dark tower business for a second, because I just want to say that I really love this story. There's so much about this. All of the characters are absolutely likable. There's no one in here who's really a bad guy or even a bad guy. You know, Robbie, he's not a stereotypical football player that you would have. Wesley has a few things, but the idea is that Wesley changes throughout. And all of his nitpicky stuff about reading on an electronic device rather than an actual book. I never got that argument. I never understood people. It's like, I'll never read from a Kindle. I prefer books. I'm like, yeah, okay, but you know what? I just went on a 3-week holiday to the States and Mexico, and I brought 1,500 books with me. Dude, my wife brought two, right? And I had everything. I had my whole library, you know? So, and again, this was in 2009, so it's a little dated in that respect. But that's the little nitpicky business about him. And those are character traits that he lets go of as the story moves forward. His girlfriend, Ellen, I thought she was going to be one of those shrill king wives. Do you remember Harold Parkett's wife from The Lawnmower Man?
Yes.
Like, she was just awful from the beginning. And he has a tendency to do that because there's usually a meaning behind that. Ellen, it turned out, was not like that at all. You know, she was quite lovely. And the other thing I found really interesting was the way that this was built. There's a line in here. He says, just owning the pink Kindle made him feel a little bit like a crook. It wasn't his, after all. And the stuff he had downloaded wasn't really his either, because he wasn't the one paying for it. That's foreshadowing, and I love that. I just love these little bits that he throws in there, and you don't think of it when you read it, but when it comes back later, somebody's going to have to pay the price for this. You realize, oh yeah, no, he told us about that in the beginning. It's just fucking beautiful.
It's the same with the paradox thing warning, where it comes up the first time and you don't really think too much about it. But when it comes up to that final one and it comes up again, you're like, oh, okay, I'm paying attention now. And what I think it is with accessing the newspaper archive one. I can't remember what that was called.
Your local. Yeah, it's Ur Local.
That's right. That's already stuff that's been passed, so he can't really do anything to change what's happened. It's just a catalogue of events that have happened in different realities.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that he's looking up his reality and what could happen in the future. He's interfered with the paradox laws. Mm-hmm. But again, with the first one, he has that warning, so I would assume it's not to rip off the books.
Yeah, exactly. And he thinks about that too at one point.
It gets brought up and yeah. He has a conscience about it. And I would feel the same way. I'm like, I couldn't pass off this as my work. People would be just calling me a Stephen King ripoff.
Well, that reminds me, actually, a couple things this story reminded me of. First and foremost, with the Kennedy assassination, reminded me of King's 1122-63. Guy goes back in time to stop the Kennedy assassination and then, of course, creates all sorts of paradoxes and things like that. So that was one thing. But the idea of, like, finding one of Hemingway's books from a different universe and publishing it as his own, first of all, yes, you would be just compared to Hemingway. You said, well, you're just copying Hemingway. You don't have your own voice. But it reminded me of a short story by F. Paul Wilson called Bob Dylan, Troy Johnson, and the Speed Queen that was published in an anthology called Shock Rock. King had a story in there too called You Know They Got a Hell of a Band, which I hope to be able to discuss at some point too if we could ever find a second story to go with it. But the Bob Dylan story is somebody goes back in time and he takes some early Bob Dylan and Byrds songs with him and passes them off as his own. And eventually time cops show up. And it goes as badly as you might expect it to. So this reminded me of that as well. And then it didn't go there, which was refreshing too. I loved everything about this story, except all the references to the Dark Tower.
And I haven't read. I've seen the movie, and that didn't really give me any indication of it. But I know enough that I picked up the clues that were there. So I was aware that this has something to do with that, but I just looked at it as its own thing.
Yeah.
With references, I guess.
Well, as much as I sort of disliked the last, it's really only the last four Dark Tower books, four and a half, I guess. The movie doesn't even come close. I mean, you can't even make the comparison there. But this one, you would have discussed Hearts in Atlantis.
Yes.
On the King's Own.
I absolutely love that film.
Well, the low men in yellow coats appear in that story, not so much as they're described in the stories, like with these mustard yellow dusters and driving these really garishly colored Cadillacs and things like that. But, you know, they're related to the Dark Tower. When he flicks on, as you mentioned, he flicks on the Kindle, he gets this image of the tower. I don't know. Even one of these low men, he uses the line, "All things serve the tower." And I guess that's true in all of King's books after a while, but it just gets to be, if you don't know the tower and you're reading this story, it's kind of jarring.
Mm.
And for a story that exists on its own so beautifully, I think it's kind of a cheat to lean so heavily on something like that. My feelings about the Dark Tower aside, I did bump on it here, and it did feel like you need backstory on this. You need to know who these guys are and what they're even talking about. Unless that's part of the mystery of it, because they're from this other world. How do you feel about that, not having read the books?
Like, just sort of knowing, I guess, the low men, like, as they're portrayed in Hearts in Atlantis in the film. That's sort of the basic familiarity. But
yeah.
Within this story, for me, I look at it as kind of like the Men in Black story of these men in black coming to visit you after you've seen a UFO or something. It's like the equivalent of that, but for this paradox. I think that's kind of the impression you get. But again, not everyone could have that. But again, like, if you've read Stephen King and you know the Dark Tower, you'll know the references and where what they are and all of that stuff, I'm sure. But knowing enough, I picked up on the references enough.
You're kind of talking me back on this. Just the Men in Black reference. Like, yes, this thing comes from another universe. These may well be that universe's version of Men in Black. You don't need to know about that universe to understand that they are from another universe.
Yeah, it's like I would say it's like the Men in Black trying to clean up what's happened and tie up the loose ends. And it is interesting that he sort of gives them an explanation as to why and what he did. And he argues that, well, maybe this was actually meant to happen, because why did I end up with this Kindle in the first place? Maybe it was supposed to happen. And the low men are sort of like, okay, I'm not too sure, but we'll lay you off, but we're taking the Kindle.
I laughed out loud at a point there. Yeah. You know who they reminded me of? The two policemen in The Big Lebowski who come after a dude, you know, his place has been trashed, everything. So yeah. Two policemen show up and only one of them really speaks, Christian Clemenson. And the other officer, when Christian Clemenson says, I wouldn't hold out much hope for the tape deck, though. And the other cop, his only line in the whole thing is, or the credence. This reminded me of that because the older, I guess, man, the older yellow coat man, he only has really two lines in the whole thing. And he's the intimidated. It's like good cop, bad cop, but neither of them is really a good cop. It's a bad cop, worse cop. And the one guy is just silent, letting the younger guy do the interrogation and everything. But when Wes brings up the idea that, look, I received this, and basically he's saying, you know, if all things serve the tower, then this was the right thing to do. And the guys sort of don't know what to say to that. They're looking at one another, and the one guy goes, we think it was a mistake in shipping. Yeah. I thought that was great. I thought that was really funny. There was one little glitch, like when they realize that the bus is going to crash, there's a drunk driver involved. Wes immediately calls Ellen, who's the basketball coach. She's on the bus with the girls, with the team. And he calls her to tell her about this. That doesn't really ring true. I feel like he already talked himself out of stealing a Hemingway book from another universe. I would think he would catch himself here. He calls her to warn her about what? An article he read from the future? And she already said, don't call me. That's another thing I wanted to say, too, about the structure. Ellen breaks up with him because she comes in the house. She's had a bad day, and she's talking to him. He's just going, uh-huh, uh-huh. But he's reading. He's reading Deliverance, and that's when she hucks the book across the room. And he says, like, that was a first edition, you illiterate bitch. He's in the wrong here, completely in the wrong. There's no way he has a leg to stand on here. She doesn't speak to him after the illiterate bitch line. He buys the Kindle sort of out of spite. Mm. And there was a line I absolutely loved. It said, it occurred to him that spite was a kind of methadone for lovers. He gets home, he's got the Kindle, and she actually has left a message for him saying she might want to get back together. But don't call me. It's not right yet. I'm still thinking. And that, again, is early in the story. Mm. So he's established that she wants to get back together with him. And if she hadn't made that call, he could still want to stop the bus from crashing to save her, regardless of whether there was hope that they were going to get back together or not. But by giving us that bait, it adds this other level. He does call her, though. And she's like, look, I can't talk to you. I don't want to talk to you, blah, blah, blah. And I would think that that would have some effect on whether she gets back together with him. And it did not. So the only part there that I bumped on was, why did he not stop himself from calling her there? Because it's Robbie Henderson, who afterwards says, look, we don't have to stop the bus. We have to stop the drunk driver.
Yeah, it changes. It changes. And that, like, that point in the story where he's like, oh, I have to call her. And it's like, dude, she's not going to fucking talk to you. You can't warn her. Yeah. And it's not going to do anything. And Robbie even says, like, if I call her or the girlfriend, it's like, they're just going to think it's a prank and stuff. Right? But then it's like, but maybe we should stop the drunk driver. Because as they read what's happening in the local newspaper in the future, they see how things are unfolding. More people die from the crash and who was responsible. And it does go a little bit dark because they're sort of trying to work out, like, when's the best time to do something. And the both of them are getting very angry because this lady is just drunk driving all over the road. It's like, no wonder she causes a crash. And when she makes her last stop and they slash the tires, it's like Wesley can't help but confront her for the things he knows that she's going to do.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of left dumbfounded there. And it sort of makes you feel sorry for her because she doesn't actually realize what the hell she's doing because she's in a drunken state. So it doesn't give you characters that you dislike, because even this drunk driver lady, you kind of feel sorry
for
her.
You feel bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder too about that, because we never get to know whether she changes her life at all. If this was like a Run Lola Run thing where you got a do-over, that would be something else. We'd know that she changed her life because of this moment, but I'm not sure what his expressing his frustration and anger, I don't know that that helped.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he didn't really need to confront her, but it's all this frustration and anger that's just built up because of what this Kindle has shown him and or what he's looked as well. But I think that's kind of like his unleashing of everything that's been happening moment. And but I find it interesting, like when he, like towards the end when he is speaking to the Loman and they bring up, well, someone on that bus could have been, you know, a serial killer or been the next Hitler. We don't know, because they actually don't know more than 6 months into the future. So it opens up some interesting stuff. Like, you could easily have had a follow-up where someone who survived that crash turned out to be someone horrific, or maybe that lady being stopped with that crash ended up doing a worse crash that had a future world leader,
right,
on it or
yeah.
something. It could unleash so much, and that could be interesting, but at the same time, it just leaves you to think and wonder, like, what could have happened.
So in the end, how would you rate this one?
I give this a solid 4. I don't want a Kindle from an alternate universe out of 5. I was very, very engrossed by the story as a whole. And I wasn't really sure where it was going, but as you get more clues, it's like, oh, okay. And I just thought it was a really interesting one. I think what kind of almost lets it down is it did feel a little bit too much like an advertisement for a Kindle. You might get the Kindle to open the alternate universes, but that's natural. It's a story about a freaking Kindle, but yeah, like, King's spin on the technology is always interesting, so I really enjoyed it.
I wish that they would have put out a limited edition pink Kindle.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be cool? It'd be like the gold ticket in the Charlie and the Chocolate. I think that would be neat. I agree. I think this is a great story. I give this absolutely 4, right up there with you. The next story we're going to look at is called Red Screen. It was also published as an ebook on September 9th, 2021. It was available through Humble Bundle, which is a digital content retailer that builds charitable donations into each sale. The story was originally released on a pay-what-you-want basis with a minimum price of $5, and I picked it up there. 100% of the proceeds from the story were donated to the American Civil Liberties Union, as directed by Mr. King, and it was only available for 1 week. Fortunately, though, it will be collected in the short story collection You Like It Darker, later in 2024. This one is much, much shorter, not quite into the range of novella, like you were saying about the other one. I really dug this one too. This is more of a vignette than a full story. It's a glimpse into a bigger story.
It reminded me of what we talked about previously with Timmy Bateman, how that was, you know, an excerpt from a larger story.
I could see this being expanded.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that novel would be something like 10 o'clock people, something where, oh, we've seen this before. This was called They Live. So I love the fact that he just said this far and no further. And it was fantastic. It's about a homicide detective named Wilson. And it starts out with him having a bad morning. He'd cut himself shaving and all that sort of stuff. But his wife is just nagging him. Stupid shit, like leaving the toilet seat up, the cap off the toothpaste. And he's not having a great day. I think he spills orange juice on himself at one point, too.
Yeah.
But then she's like, look, you put beer bottles in the trash. And she's just on him. And he's like, I'm out of here. So he goes into work and there's a suspect there. Not even a suspect. I mean, the guy has
confessed to
murdering his wife. And the guy states that his wife was not his wife. And right there, immediately, I was like, ooh, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yep.
And he's talking about the thing that I killed wasn't my wife, although the DNA will probably match because he sort of describes it as possession, but not possession. These beings come in and take us over. We die as soon as they enter us, but then they're walking around in our bodies. So, of course, the DNA would match. And Wilson's tuning out. He's not even listening to the guy anymore. It's just a matter of, okay, so you're going for an insanity defense. I think Wilson says, so it's not The Exorcist, it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes.
And actually that brings that reference around, which I liked. I thought that was good.
And it's funny, like, through this interrogation, and he sort of, like, thinks it's insanity defense because he starts going on about, like, he learnt about all this on the dark web and, you know, it just sounds like really silly conspiracy theory shit that we hear in this day and age.
Yeah, and this dark web business, Lenny says that they, the aliens or whatever they are, they get this red flash on their devices, like their phone or their tablet or something, that sort of, I don't know if it's a signal from the home world. I don't know what it is, but there's this red flash that...
If you are one of the aliens, I believe your phone or device will flash a red screen.
That's right.
That's the title of the story.
That's why Wilson's just like, okay, I'm writing you off. I'm gonna send you back to your cell. And you think about this. You think about if you really want this to be your defense. And that's it. That's the conversation he has with him. I was thinking of as possibly a really, really good Twilight Zone episode, or had it a darker ending, maybe Tales from the Dark Side. This one is totally Tales from the Dark Side. The way this one ends, he goes home and his wife has already, she's made dinner, but she's nagging on him because you said you were going to be home at 5. He's like, well, you know, something came up. I mean, he's a murder detective, right? So, yes,
yeah, something's surely going to come up.
Sure.
Right?
And this was one where in the beginning I thought, oh, okay, this woman again. But in this case, it actually does mean something in the story, because the plumber, Lenny Crocker, the reason he killed his wife was, yes, she was an alien, she was a being from another planet, but they want to dominate us. And she had been nagging him for months. And that's what we know about Wilson's wife. So King sort of plants that seed there for us. And when he gets home and she's put the chicken back in the oven for him and it's all, it's dried out and it's awful, but he's trying to eat it anyway. And he gets the call that Crocker has killed himself. So we see a shift in his wife. Sandy sort of reads the expression on his face and she comes over to him and there's sympathy there. And he explains to her what happened and she, you know, she puts a hand on his shoulder and he accepts that warmth. And then they go off and they get together. They haven't been together for a month, he reckons. And when they're finished, she says, you know, do you still smoke? And he thinks about lying, but he's like, yeah, sometimes. She's like, okay, give me one. I have something to tell you. And he's like, oh my God, okay. You're not leaving me, are you? And I loved how it was written. He was joking. He wasn't joking. And she says, no. And the reason she's been so sort of edgy and everything is she's hit menopause. So she's just laying this out for him now that this is a really hard time for her. She didn't know how to tell him because before she told him, she would have to accept it as true. Mm. He's like, oh, okay, you know, this all makes sense. So then at the end, once everything is fine for them, we see that her phone, what's this? I actually want to read this. She reaches past him, her breast pressing his cheek, and turns out the light. For a moment, no more than a second, the screen of his cell phone flashes red. In the dark, Sandy Wilson smiles. So you know everything that Lenny said to him was absolutely true.
It's true.
Yeah.
Although that makes me wonder if, because I'm trying to remember, Lenny talks about the red screen flashing on the phone. I think it must just be, like, it could have been his or his wife's phone. I can't remember who he says, but I think that the implication is that somebody is being taken over by this alien force.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And with the smile that Sandy, the wife, gives, you're gonna guess it was her, and perhaps her plan of domineering Wilson has actually kind of worked, because again, he seems satisfied with that answer and she's changed up her attitude. But perhaps with Lenny, He wasn't falling for it, and this is why he ended up killing his wife, whereas perhaps Wilson is not going to get to that point because I think she's got him turned.
Yeah, for sure. I thought this was a really cool story. I like this a lot. I want to know what happens next. Like, I want to know more. And I think that's the hallmark of a good short story like this.
Yeah.
It leaves you wanting more. I don't know that it would be satisfying if it continued.
Yeah, it could literally be anything. Lenny could assume it's aliens, but maybe it's something else completely. We don't know. It could be dark web hackers trying to control the population. We don't actually know. And I like that we have different aspects of the quote-unquote evil technology or technology going bad, where in the first one, it's a Kindle that just happened to be sent to the wrong person, perhaps, with all this extra stuff on it. And here, it's like the devices could potentially be what causes an alien invasion or something like that.
Yeah, world
so
domination.
So it's using them for different things. There's a contrast there, and we got that with the... It's not a typewriter, it's the word processor and the phone. Like, different things, but King understands how to make him scary. It reminds me a little bit because it's like an evil, I guess you could say it was an evil Kindle, but it's not really evil. But it's almost like on the Simpsons episode where Marge asks Stephen King, oh, what's your next book about? And he's like, oh, it's just about a lamp, this evil, scary lamp. It's almost like that in my head, like... As I was getting to read the stories, I'm like, oh, what weird thing is he made evil phones or evil Kindles? But no, they were both like very different, but both very, very good.
Yeah. I got to give this one a 4 as well. Thought this was great.
I'm right there with you. It gets 4. I don't want to see no flashing red screen on my devices out of 5. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, it'll be really good that it will be collected, I guess, later this year with You Like It Darker. So more people will get to check this one out if they didn't for that week-long release. And I guess, yeah, if people haven't heard of Red Screen, look out for that being collected. But also check out whatever we're calling it.
Another really
Another really interesting and compelling story. And it just, for me, it just shows, like, King can be quite consistent. Like, yeah, there are the weaker stories and stuff, but still, like, within the last few years, like, he's still going strong, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I've got to go back now. I've got to pick up my copy of The Bazaar of Bad Dreams and reread and see how that compares to this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued by that. It does say it was heavily revised, so I'm curious, is it shorter? What could have been changed? But now I'm curious, might have to pick that up as well.
Yeah, and we'll have a bonus episode where we talk about that.
We might need to.
All right, very good. Well, let's wrap this one up. We will be back in, let's say, mid-June to talk about two further stories. We'll be looking at Crouch End and N. Just the letter N. This is a return to Lovecraft country.
Very excited. I think we've had this one lined up for a little bit, so very keen to get into that on the next episode. And you can find us at supermarcy.com. The King Zones Book Club podcast is part of the King Zone podcast feed, and you can subscribe to that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the others. You can just look it up or get the links at supermarcy.com. And personally, you can find me as Super Marcy on all the social medias. I am super_Marcy on Letterboxd, and you can see the weird shit that I watch on a weekly basis. And my solo podcast, After Dark with Super Marcy, you can also look that up on all your podcast streaming players and sign up for that. And Steve.
I want to send people over to check out Bede and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake. Bede and I have been talking about the Friday the 13th movies for the last 7 months. That is available on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find me on socials, basically over at Letterboxd. is where I hang out. I am Fulcirama over there if you want to see what I've been watching and reviewing.
Yes, be sure to follow us both on Letterboxd. It is one of my most preferred social platforms. And yes, we will see you back in the King Zones Book Club podcast space in mid-June. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Bye.